You can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk. 4 minutes after 12 is the time. So that's how it works. That's how we roll. You ring in with a question. It has to be a question that has an answer. Someone else rings in with the answer. And somehow, from those base metals, we make pure gold, pure radio gold. And when I say you can't look anything up, it should be obvious, but I do appreciate that sometimes it isn't. Don't look anything. If someone asks a question, you think, oh, I'll just Google that, or I'll look that up now, and you haven't got... just don't do it. It has to be something you know. So when I ask what your qualifications are, you don't have to have a PhD in applied mathematics. You could just say, oh, I saw it on the telly last night, James. Or the one I really hate, but which happens quite often because we've been doing this for so long. You might say, oh, I heard it on Mystery Hour before. I can't believe the presenter has forgotten. Don't say the second bit. That's just mean. All right. Anyway, everyone hears it. It's in brackets anyway, isn't it? It's like the K in knife. It's there, but it's silent. Everyone knows. That's what you're thinking. I heard it on Mystery Hour. I can't believe the presenter has forgotten. But that, so what I mean is anything does, anything goes by way of qualification. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we just get going? Should we do away with a ponderous introduction on this one? I think we shall. Paul is in Woking. Paul, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on.
So it's a question on behalf of my daughter, actually. So at the weekend, we were watching the rugby. And she asked me the question, why is the rugby ball shaped like that? So, I mean, I know, I presume there's some kind of aerodynamic kind of properties or something, but it was more about what's the origin of it? Why, you know, I know about like William Webb Ellis and picking the ball up, the football up and that, but
I think you've answered it there without realising it.
Yeah, I think it's aerodynamics.
I think it, because William Webb Ellis picked up a football.
Yeah.
And if the rugby ball was not shaped like a football, then it would just be football, wouldn't it? You'd just kick it. You might pick it up occasionally.
The origins of why. At what point did it go from being a...
I'm just doing the why of it before we do the when of it. Because because it's ovoid, that means that you are better served passing it than you would be with a round ball. So that will be, I imagine, that's the reason. But when we go from William Webb Ellis picking up the football at rugby school and running over the line with it to the ovoid ball coming into common usage, is a really, really good question. How old's your daughter?
She's 11.
So you should give yourself a slightly unfair advantage there on the who's going to win a board game game, don't you? Because there's an 11-year-old there who could be right. I'll put that in brackets. So, because it's a brilliant question, although obviously the quality of the question depends slightly on the quality of the answer. So you're in the lead at the moment, Paul, but it's a field of one.
Marvellous.
Let's find out. When did the rugby ball become ovoid? And why? I could be wrong about why, of course. Hugo's in Manchester. Hugo, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Why do dogs on heat get warm? Or do dogs on heat get warm? And if they don't, why is it called dogs on heat?
Pardon?
I understood you.
So by on heat, you mean kind of ovulating?
I think that's what it means when the dog.
It's always it's always the female dog that we're talking about. Male dogs are always on.
Yeah.
So, okay, and do they actually become warmer?
That's my question.
Yeah, no, you can't have the supplementary, that's just the rules. You can't have if not, why not, on heat, you know.
Okay, do they get warmer?
Do they get, actually, I mean, you could just have bought a thermometer. You didn't have to ring a radio show for this one.
Well, I've got a dog, not a bitch, so I don't know.
Oh, fair enough, okay. I quite like that. It'd be a bit odd if they don't, but it may have a slightly different meaning. All right, Hugo, you're on. 8 minutes after 12 is the time. Do dogs on heat get warmer than dogs that are not on heat? 0345 606 0973. Rob's in Reading. Rob, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, Rob.
Do lakes and large bodies of water have tides? If they do, how large does the body of water have to be before the moon begins to affect the tide? Because seas do very large lakes or lochs.
Ooh.
Mmm.
I mean, they can't, can they?
I don't know, because I was watching one of the...
But it's a finite amount of water in a finite amount of space, is a lake.
Yes.
Whereas a sea, they're kind of all linked, aren't they?
Mm.
When you look at the globe. But where does... So, but it... Oh, I like this question a lot.
Yes, because I was watching one of these travel programs, and they were on a houseboat in this enormous great lake in the States.
Yeah.
Absolutely huge it was.
Yeah.
And it's a permanent houseboat fixture. So you just sail around the lake for your holiday.
Yeah. But there's no tides.
I don't know. It didn't come up.
Wouldn't be, though, would there?
If it was big enough, surely it would have a tide, big enough and large enough.
Well, at what point would it have a tide? Are all seas linked? I mean, is everything that we call a sea or an ocean connected in some way?
If you look yes.
At, well, that might, yes. That might be it, then. Oh, I like
I'm
this.
I'm not sure.
No, nor am I. I like this one a lot. Well, maybe it's not as complicated as we're thinking it is. And if, I mean, you know, a lake, however big it is, if it is self-contained and doesn't lead into any other body of water, it's not going to have a tide.
So is it being linked to a smaller or larger lake? What gives it the tide?
I'm putting it on the board. I'm going to stop speculating here because I don't think that I'm covering myself in glory, Rob.
Me too.
No, thank you, I think.
Thank you very much.
How big? Yeah, all right. So essentially, it's what has tides, or what determines the bodies of water that have tides. I like that question. If you can answer it, I shall give you the money myself. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. 0345 606 0973 is the number you need. The shape of a rugby ball, the temperature of a dog on heat. It's like a poetry book. This and the criteria under which a body of water becomes tidal. Criteria, tidal. I'm writing them all down now because we are obviously giving away a board game to the best contributor, and we've got three now, Paul, or rather his 11-year-old daughter, Hugo and Rob. Jack is in Padstow in Cornwall, 11 minutes after 12. Shouldn't you be on service?
Day off today, James.
Day off today, yeah. Unbelievable. Seriously, they're not going to feed themselves, you know, those tourists in Cornwall, Jack. Question or answer?
It's a question. I'd like to know, at what age does a bone become a fossil? Because you find like old bones of humans, Australopithecus and all these kind of old human bones and mammoths and stuff, but you don't find actual bones of dinosaurs. They're always fossils. So is there an age at which the bone will just become a fossil?
Isn't it the definition of fossilized, though? Wouldn't it be?
When
it becomes a stone, doesn't it? Or have I been thick?
Well, I don't know, because you don't find fossilized human remains, you know, old human remains or woolly mammoths.
No, but that's not because there's a clock ticking. That's just coincidental that they haven't been around for long enough, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Because I would have thought you would then therefore find dinosaur bones that weren't fossilized if they stuck around.
What does fossa mean? Well, I'm trying to think of what the origin of the word is. The origin of the word. No, fossil is a ditch.
I did an archaeology degree, and I don't
know. Did you
know,
really?
So.
What the heck are you asking me for?
I've no idea.
Unbelievable. Fossil is ditch. It's not. No, I remember that from. So I'm just trying to think where the word comes from. But I think it's not about. I mean, it's not going to be. There's not an answer that's going to be 10,000 years, Jack, is it?
No.
It's going to be. It becomes a fossil when it changes into stone. That doesn't sound very likely either. What's the definition of a fossil?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Compared to a bone.
Compared to just a bone. When does a bone become a fossil?
Yeah.
And the answer, I don't know why I'm telling you. You've got a degree in archaeology. The answer might well be 10,000 years, but I don't know. So, all right, you're on. When does a bone become a fossil? I like that one as well. 30 minutes after. Thank you very much, Jack. If you are wondering why I was teasing Jack about not being in the kitchen, I should tell you, because, of course, so many new people listening to the programme. He's a scion of the great Stein seafood dynasty. 12:13 is the time. Is that how you pronounce it, Keith? Is it scion? Scion or skian? Skian? I don't know. I'll tell you what. I say, Keith, there's another one here. They're like buses. Keith's in Wilsdon. Keith, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on, Keith, too.
So does a fish really rot from the head down?
I think it doesn't. I think it's a figure of speech that I deploy quite regularly, oddly enough, when discussing the government. But
absolutely.
Some of these
common phrases and sayings do actually have some scientific basis, like the, you know, the red sky at night, shepherd's delight is about, you know.
Indeed.
The sunrise, you know.
Pressure.
So, you know. Maybe a fish really does rot from the head.
And if it doesn't, where did it come from? I mean, you're not allowed supplementaries, but does a fish rot from the from the head down? I like that question. I also like that figure of speech. And Keith, I'm just going to ask your permission. If it turns out that a fish doesn't rot from the head down, do you think I'd be within my rights to continue using it as a figure of speech, given that it has achieved such popularity over the centuries?
I don't think that would be a problem.
Thank you very much. Keith 1 says fake news, but Keith 2 says that we're good to go. I'm going to stick with Keith 2 on this one. Thank you very much, Keith 2 in Willesden. So, does a fish rot from the head down? When does a bone become a fossil? What is the criteria under which a body of water becomes tidal? Does a dog on heat get hot? And when did a rugby ball become ovoid? Or when was the rugby ball invented, I suppose? 12:15 is the time.
This is LBC.
How do you make the perfect all-electric car from scratch? First, take the base ingredients of a Jaguar: power, luxury, agility, and add cutting-edge battery innovation with up to 292-mile range and fast-charge technology. Then, garnish with 78 international awards. Jaguar I-Pace. It's the smarter electric choice. Until the 31st of December, get up to £4,000 finance deposit contribution with 0% APR representative. Available online or from your local retailer. Selected I-Pace models only. Personal contract purchase. Terms and conditions apply. Black Horse Limited Trading is Jaguar Financial Services. Participating retailers only. WLTP mileage and may vary.
Yeah, on LBC with James O'Brien.
It is 18 minutes after 12. I got a fishmonger complaining that he can't get through. You've got to keep trying, honestly. I'll run you through the questions that are on the board. Surely we'll get a couple more, perhaps, and start on the answers. If you know the answer to a question that we've already asked, you have to ring in, otherwise you get banned from that. You don't, of course you don't, but it would be nice. 18 minutes after 12. Also, these days, if you ring in with a question or an answer, you run a very real chance of seeing it immortalised forever in the, what are they called when you get a boot? Is it a booster pack? We're going to do more questions for the board game. So is it? Would you call it a booster pack? So you might, if you've been on in the past, your question or your answer might have made the grade. Some wrong, I mean, the wrong answers are on there as well. I should tell you, actually, if you're thinking of getting it, we played it at the weekend. I'll give you some advice. The trick is to take the made-up question really seriously. So what happens on the board game is each card has a question on it, obviously, and it has a right answer and it has a wrong answer, but you are allowed to make up your own wrong answer as well, and you get the most points if other players choose your wrong answer as being the right answer, i.e. you're looking to make up a really plausible, like Call My Bluff or something like that. But we played at the weekend and some of the people playing really took it seriously and wrote down, you will not be surprised to learn, was feeling very cocky and thought I'd be able to wing it and remember from that. I got annihilated, particularly by my nephews. Absolutely annihilated. But the ones who did best were the ones who actually bothered to write down. Because when you're reading them out, even if you do this for a living, you can tell that when the person is making it up as opposed to when they're reading it out. So you read out two and then make one up off the top of your head. If you write down the one you're making up, and you get time, you get about, say, give yourself 5-10 minutes when the cards have been dealt for everybody just to spend a bit of time. And that not only increases your chance of winning, but also improves expansion pack. Thank you. Expansion pack, it's called. Gosh, it's weird the things you text me about. I sit here looking for help with all sorts of complicated issues, and I ask you what it's called when you get extra cards for a board game, and my inbox goes bonkers. Expansion pack. So if you ask a good question or a good answer, you might make the expansion pack. But that is my advice if you're buying the game, if you're playing the game, which you can get, of course, from mysteryhour.co.uk, then take a little bit of time to make up your own answers as well, because it makes the game better. And it's also really good fun, but it also increases your chances of getting maximum points, as I discovered to my cost on Saturday evening. 21 after 12 is the time. Back to Mystery. Let's go to David, who's in the Netherlands. David, question or answer?
I'll have an answer, James.
Carry on, David.
The tides question.
Oh, good. I like that one. Go on.
Yeah. So, in theory at least, all bodies of water will have a tide, no matter how tiny the body of water. Of course, it's a matter of degree, though. So,
really?
The smaller the body of water, the smaller the tide.
For the same reasons, because it is attracted to the... Well, tell us what a tide is.
Well, so it's actually the gravitational attraction of the moon pulling the water upwards. And if you can imagine, because you were saying earlier on, well, how can a lake have a tide if it hasn't got anywhere for the water to go? Well, it kind of goes to the middle of the lake, so it sort of heaps up in the middle.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And pulls away from the side.
I
don't know specifically.
So
about
the bigger
the
body, the more visible the tidal activity.
Basically, yeah. And if I was looking at...
A puddle have a tide? It would, wouldn't it? Even a puddle would have a tide. Yeah,
yeah, in theory.
Well, you live and learn,
eh? Of course, it would be so tiny, whether you could measure it or not would be another question.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
And in the Baltic Sea, for example, I was researching to go sailing there, and I think that the tides there are about 25 centimetres. And that's, of course, an enormous sea that is connected to the ocean.
Yeah.
But because it's almost not connected, the
narrowness of the channel, the canal, or whatever it is. That's an amazing answer. In fact, that's a really good answer. I'm going to make sure. So, David in the Netherlands. Are you in the Netherlands permanently?
Since Brexit, more and more so, yeah.
Okay, I don't want to rain on your parade, but we haven't quite got the hang of overseas deliveries yet with the board game, but you're very much in the frame.
That's okay, I've got a UK address, and I'm very pleased to see it.
It's not over yet. It's not over yet. We've got Paul's 11-year-old daughter still very much in the frame, but that is that is a brilliant... Hang on, what are your qualifications before I get all carried away?
Well, I'm gonna go with two qualifications here. Firstly, I'm an amateur sailor, so
yes.
I know a little bit about the tides from that. And also, I have studied geology with the Open University. And, of course, tides also affect the land, albeit to a very, very tiny degree, because it's solid, so it obviously doesn't move quite as easily.
Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at some of the moons of Jupiter, the tides are enough to cause the ice to melt. I think it's Europa that's completely covered with ice, and it has sort of water volcanoes because of the tidal pressures from Jupiter.
I'll tell you what, that is an extremely strong answer. Even Keith is nodding in approval of this, and it certainly gets you a round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Absolute thing of beauty, that answer. Who'd have thought it, that puddles have tides? 03456060973 is the number you need if you want to join in. I say it as a sort of almost a punctuation mark, really, like a reflex. It's incredibly hard to get through on Thursdays, often, but not always. So it's weird. Some people get on quite a lot. Other people text me every week to say they can't get through. I don't know what the secret is, but that's why I occasionally say the number. Tim's in Hayward Heath. Tim, question or answer?
This is a question.
Carry on, Tim.
So my question is, why does the moon not rotate? Why is there a dark side of the moon? So obviously the Earth rotates every 24 hours, goes around the sun once a year. But the moon, there's always a dark side. It never rotates. Why is that? Is it held in some sort of gravitational field from the Earth?
I don't know how to answer this question.
Oh, that's unusual.
Well, I mean, I do, obviously. Let's not get carried away here. But it does rotate. The moon does rotate.
It doesn't, because there's always a dark side.
Yeah, but it does, you see.
Well, it rotates around the sun around the Earth once a month.
Yeah.
But there's always the dark
side. So it rotates on its axis.
So in the same way that the Earth spins on its axis.
Yeah.
The moon does not spin on its axis. It's always facing away from
you. No, it does rotate. The moon does rotate on its axis. This is what I mean by not knowing how to handle this question.
Well, then
because I can't answer the next bit. I don't want you to think I'm, an astronomer. I'm Brian Cox or anything. But it does rotate on its axis.
I beg to differ.
Well, you can't. I mean, it's
why can't I?
Well, because it's like claiming it's made of cheese.
Well, we know that's true, of course, but...
The moon rotates on its axis.
No, it doesn't.
I swear to you, it does.
It rotates around the Earth, which is every month.
Yeah.
It doesn't rotate
on its axis. Who would you accept, then, if you're not going to accept me? Which is perfectly reasonable. I mean,
Cox, if you can get him on,
Can we go a bit lower than Brian Cox? A qualification that you'd expect?
Someone who deals in sort of astrophysics,
right,
for example.
See, what we've done here is, unfortunately, we've nixed the interesting question by insisting upon the relevance of the bogus question, Tim. No offence. Because I would like to know how come... I mean, but the moon rotates on its axis, James, so how can it have a dark side? That would have been a brilliant question, you see.
Well, except...
But you've gone in wrong. You've gone in on the moon doesn't rotate on its axis when it does. It does, you see.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I just know it. Because it's come up before on Mystery Hour. That's why I knew immediately I was going to struggle with this question.
Okay.
And now here I am, struggling. Not as much as you, Tim, but nevertheless struggling.
I'm not struggling.
Well, that's the problem.
I struggle to believe your answer.
That's the problem here. If you struggled a bit more, we might have been able to get to the dark side of the moon question, which is actually quite interesting, although I think we've done it before.
Okay. Well,
it's on the board. Keith has got a cupboard full of humble pie, mate. He loves nothing more than bringing a slice in to the studio and sitting there with a cheeky grin on his face as I tuck into yet another slice of humble pie. I will eat my humble pie happily and humbly if it turns out that the moon does not rotate on its axis.
But then why would there be a dark side?
But Daddy, you can't ask that now because you've blown it by getting the axis question wrong.
No, I haven't.
You have.
Well...
Have you seen the board game? Have you seen the name on it? It says James O'Brien's Mystery Hour board game. It does not say Tim in Haywards Heath's Mystery Hour. I make up the rules, and the rules are that, well, anyway, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I'm not.
You should get into politics.
Oh, don't be ridiculous. Can't afford the pay cut. 27 minutes after 12 is the time. I stole that line off Nick Ferrari, I think. Not the only line I've stolen off Nick over the years. The moon question, Tim Haywards Heath. I'm writing all this down. It's a rare outbreak of professionalism on the programme. Alex is in Haverhill. Question or answer, Alex?
Oh, hi, James. Yeah, slightly more simple question than the
you
one
You say
four.
That. Often people think the questions are simple. They turn out to be anything but. Go on. What have we got?
Well, I just wanted to know what the earliest record of a human name is.
Oh, I like that. So earliest record is doable, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can't... Can't be like what was the first name because it would have predated human records, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, well, yes.
So the first recorded human name would it be? No, I can't. We just go before the Bible, wouldn't it? Why am I trying to answer this? I haven't got a clue.
I thought about it a couple of weeks ago. And I think I posted it on Reddit. And no one had an answer for me, and then I thought, I was just thinking of it today.
Well, let's see. The first recorded human name. There must be. I mean, I love that. Let's find out. Well, let's see if we do. It wouldn't be Adam and Eve. It would be before Adam and Eve, because it wasn't the first thing that was written down, was it? In fact, the Bible language, written word, had to exist before the Bible, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to write the Bible. Thank you, Alex. I like that a lot. It's 29 minutes after 12. So what?
If you own a business, you know customers are back with all the ways they want to pay.
Tap half on my card, half on my watch.
Do you take 1998 World Cup stickers?
And now, to pay you for this coffee, a song.
Macchiato Maker!
With card machines and online solutions, take any kind of payment quickly and securely.
Chocolate Sprinkle Shaker!
Well, almost any kind. Search Barclaycard Business today. We take every payment seriously. The approval of your application depends on financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
On LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:33. Mystery Hour continues to unfold in scintillating fashion. Let us go to Matthew, who is in Tunbridge Wells. Matthew, question or answer?
I have an answer, James.
Carry on.
So the do fish rot from the head down? I'm your fishmonger that can get through.
Oh, welcome aboard.
Thank you. So the first part of the fish that rots is the gills, within the head of the fish.
Yes. So it does rot from the head down.
It does rot from the head down. The reason they do that is they have a very large surface area. They are effectively, kind of surrounded by air. And obviously we know things oxidise, and that's how bacteria kind of starts breaking things down. And what we call rot is actually bacteria. They're also full of blood, which is lovely high protein, which bacteria likes. And then it spreads down the fish because the main vein of a fish goes down the backbone of the fish.
Is it visible?
The gill, yes, they'll change colour. And if you go to...
But can you see it moving down the fish, the rot, the bacteria, if you had a camera on it over a period of time?
If you were to dissect a fish, I've never done that, but you would see, if you were to study it day by day, you could probably see the colour of the blood changing as it oxidises throughout the fish. I mean, indeed...
Love it.
A very fresh fish will have runny blood, and actually, as you go forward, as it gets a bit older, the blood at the head congeals, and the blood in the tail is still running.
Quite, whatever the opposite of viscous is. I can't remember. Runny will do. Runny will do nicely. Can tell you're the expert. And I don't need to ask what your qualifications are because you've already told me.
Oh, there you go.
Matthew the Fishmonger. Do you want to mention your fishmongers?
Shanky's Fishmongers in Tunbridge Wells.
Shanky's?
Shanky's.
Shanky's Fishmongers in Tunbridge Wells. There you go. Matthew knows what he's talking about. Get yourself down there. Lovely answer. Round of applause for Matthew. That's a very exuberant celebration as well. 12:35 is the time. Ken's in Southport. Ken, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Ken.
It's about the moon.
Oh, yes. Why here we go. Right, hang on a minute. Tim Haywards Heath, pay attention, pal. All right, here it comes. Fill your boots, Ken.
Okay. Well, firstly, the moon does spin on its axis.
Round of applause for me. Thank you very much.
But the reason we see only one side of the moon is something called tidal locking. Tidal locking, yes.
Tidal locking.
It's the Earth causing a tide on the moon. It pulls the moon.
Earth's gravity.
Pulls the moon, yeah, towards Earth. And it bulges. So when it bulges, it's like, you know, it's coming out as a bit of a point, a bit of an egg shape.
Yes.
And eventually, like a skater spinning on ice, if they open their arms, they will eventually slow down. They lose the angular momentum. So it then, over 10 billion years, it's locked into the moon. The moon is locked into the Earth. So it's stopped.
So the pointy bit is always nearer the Earth because they're rotating almost in tandem, which means that the dark side, the other side of the moon, the non-pointy bit, is always...
It's always pointing
on the other side while it rotates on its axis.
Exactly, yeah.
Thank you. Qualifications?
Well, I studied like a physics evening class at Liverpool University and we had to write a paper and I chose this subject.
Fantastic. That'll do nicely. Round of applause for Ken.
See more than half the moon is another thing as well. We actually see slightly more than about 59% of the moon. It moves about a tiny bit.
Oh, it's a shame it's not 52%. That's my favourite ratio, Ken. It's got your round of applause and extra information thrown in on the end as well. Let me cross that one out, or at least so as long as I can still read it, because I'm going to have to award a prize. Richard, I think Ken's in the running there. Yeah, Tim definitely not in the running. Richard is in Dorchester. Richard, question or answer?
It's an answer, I do know the answer. Why do surgeons in operating theatres always wear green gowns?
That's a question.
Well, I have the answer.
What do you mean you have the answer?
Well, it's question and answer, isn't it?
Oh, bless you. No, it's not, mate. You're only allowed to ask questions that you don't know the answer to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Is this the first time you've tuned in?
No, I spoke to you about the Good Life board game.
And of course you did, yes. But you didn't realise that this is... You ring in and ask a question and then someone else rings in and answers it. You thought that you ring in and challenge me. So, listen, I'm pretty cocky, Richard. But the idea that every week for 15 years people have been ringing in on the premise that I know the answer to everything is a little bit ambitious, even by my egotistical standards.
Okay. I can match you on that, yes.
Well, but, I can't accept your question because you already know the answer to it. But we'll talk again, I'm sure. I'm glad we nipped that one in the bud. That could have been embarrassing. But no, God, I hope I don't give the impression that I used to, when we start. Do you remember, Keith, when you were a kid listening to this in your short trousers, sitting on your mother's knee? I used to try and answer everything. I really did. It's when you framed the ambition to one day work here, wasn't it? Sitting in the old rocking chair with Mrs. Keith, old Mark Keith, thinking one day, son, you could be working on the team of, and here we are now, all these years later. But no, it doesn't work like that. Shirley's in Coventry. Don't call me Shirley. Question or answer?
A question.
Carry on, Shirley. Stop giggling. I'm trying to work.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
The question is, if both parents are left-handed,
yes,
and the first child they have is left-handed,
yeah,
will that mean that they every child after that, they will get a left-handed child?
Why would the first child be relevant to the question?
Well, I'm just saying, if the first one is left-handed.
Is this are you asking me from a very personal perspective on this?
Yes.
So you have got in your family left-handed people. Have you just described your family to me?
Yes.
And are you the mum or the grandma?
The mother. Don't be cheeky.
I can't tell from here, can I? I've not been cheeky. I just, you know what it's like these days. Could be a grandma in your 30s. It's nothing. There's no So you?
No. I am the mother.
And you are left-handed.
And so is my husband.
And so is your firstborn.
Yes.
And are you currently pregnant?
No. Right. A bit too late for that now.
What did you say? Too late for that now? You can't. Right. Keith's loving this, by the way. You've made his day. I don't know why he's finding it so funny. I thought it was a perfectly reasonable inquiry. I could get lost. I could put your applause away. I can't tell how old someone is by talking to them on the phone, honestly. So if you'd had another child, would it have definitely been left-handed, is what you're really asking?
Yes.
I love it. I love it a lot, actually. We shall try and find out for you. I don't...
Because in my parents' family...
Yeah.
Which I came from...
Clearly. Thanks for the update there, Shirley. That was a very helpful piece of information. Go on.
They were both right-handed. The firstborn was right-handed, but me, who was second, I was left-handed.
Oh, well, I don't know why it would be any different the other way around. It could skip a generation, clearly. But I don't know if they, I mean, who would know? I mean, just because someone who might fit the criteria you fit and they had a second child and the child was left-handed wouldn't prove that it was always going to happen, would they? Would it?
No.
We need, really, I think I might remove the firstborn from the equation, if I may, because it makes things too complicated. The question really is, will two left-handed parents always have a left-handed child, isn't it?
Yes.
Can I do that?
You can.
Right, you're on. Thank you, Shirley.
That's okay.
And I apologise for my slightly, what would the word be? I don't know. Cheeky was the word you used. For my slightly cheeky intervention.
That's quite all right. It's nice to see somebody cheeky for a change.
I do my best, Charlie. I do my best. 12:42 is the time. The cheeky intervention. That's the name of our new band, Keith, I think. Vieri, a.k.a. Dr. Dog, is in Frankfurt, which means you're here to talk about dogs on heat. Imagine if you just tuned in to this radio programme, having read some of the reviews, and you thought you were going to get coruscating political analysis and really, you know, courageous speaking of truth to power, a refusal to fall into all of the lazy, demagogic right-wing traps about whining about dinghies when there are really massively important things going on. And then you turn it on and he says, here's a bloke in Frankfurt who wants to talk about dogs on heat. Vieri, fill your boots.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, what a break from talking about all the other stuff.
Exactly that. That's why we do it.
Yeah, so the question was, do dogs get hot when they're on heat?
Yes.
And the answer is, no, they don't.
Ooh.
Not as humans would.
Really?
Female humans do have a raise of temperature because their heat cycle, as it were, is regular once a month. And you can measure the temperature of a woman and know exactly which stage she's at.
Is that right? Ovulation cycle.
That's right.
But not with dogs.
It's something... Yeah, but because you can't time it. That's why there isn't a pill for female dogs.
I didn't know that.
Because you just don't know when it's going to happen. It depends on the breed and so on and so forth. So what happens is... There is a slight temperature change, but that's probably just due to her excitement and meeting other dogs and that kind of stuff. But otherwise, no. If, however, the dog is showing signs of heat, so, for example, you know, excretions from the vulva and that kind of stuff, especially blood, and is also showing a temperature, that is a really serious condition because
that is an
inflammation of the womb, and it's called pyometra, and it's a life-threatening condition. So... You know, if the caller who called in before was wondering if his dog has got temperature and is on heat, go to the vet.
No, he didn't have he had a dog, not a bitch. He was just curious.
Okay.
So thank goodness for that. There's no need for a medical alert at this point in proceedings. But there you go. So probably the phrase comes from humans. They just presumed back in the day that dogs would be the same as humans.
Well, they go through similar changes in mood swings and they become more irritable, just like it happens to women.
You might say that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'm not Dr. Girl. I'm Dr. Dog.
So, yes, indeed you are. I've just answered my next question. Very qualifications?
I work with dogs. I'm Dr. Dog.
I'm Dr. Dog. Round of applause for Vieri.
Thank you.
Catching up with Professor Howe soon on the Total. I wonder if Professor Howe is too busy, you know. He's making TV shows now, everything. We've created a monster. He's too busy for the likes of us. Vieri also makes TV shows, I should add, in the animal behaviourist, animal expert field. 12:45 is the time. It's all going rather well.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
It's 12:49 already. Does Keith ever give you the wrong name of the newsreader in your ear on purpose if you're mean to him? Asked Paul in Newbury. Theoretical question, mate, isn't it? Because I'm never mean to Keith, so we'll never know. That's how it works. Although I sometimes point out how loud his voice is in my ear. Go on, say the name of the newsreader.
Amelia Cox.
See? And then I say, that's a bit loud, mate. And do you know what he says to me? He says, well, you're the only one who complains. Eddie Mayer never complains. I say, I'm not actually complaining. I'm just pointing out that I often get messages from people saying, I just heard Keith say the name of the newsreader in your ear. So why is mine? Why do you hear it when I'm on the radio? Eddie's so professional. He's probably got some technique that involves not having the bit of the... I don't know. But it's not just me, Keith. Other people, how do they know that you say the name of my newsreader in my ear if they can't hear you saying the name of the newsreader in my ear? And when I point out that they can hear you saying the name of the newsreader in my ear, why do you always say no one else complains? There's no echo between my ears, you cheeky bagger. 12:49 is the time. Back to mystery. Our Malcolm's in Basildon. Malcolm, question or answer?
James, I've got a question for
Carry
you.
On, Malcolm. You're cutting it fine, but, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Well, it's a quickie. Yes. If we send somebody into space from English-speaking countries, America, the West,
yeah.
They're called astronauts.
Yeah.
But if they go from Russia, we call them cosmonauts.
Yeah.
Now, they're both English words to name people doing the same job.
Well, they're not English. What? They're not English words. They're Latin, I suppose. They've got a Latin root. Astra meaning star and cosmos meaning planet, I think.
Why do we apply one to people who go up from America and so on and a completely different word?
Well, it'll be the Cold War, won't it? It'll be the Cold. They just wanted their own word. The Russians wanted their own word.
So you think the Russians told us that that's what they wanted to
call? Or the other way around. No, it's like you say, what is your job description? And you, Yuri Gagarin, didn't say, I am an astronaut. He said,
Said it in Russian, and we've translated it.
It's a cosmonaut. And then you say to Neil Armstrong, what are you? And he'd say, I'm an astronaut, man. So you've just...
Was Yuri Gagarin Welsh?
He was, actually.
That was a Welsh accent.
He had a Welsh grandmother. He came from the valleys. That's why he was so interested in exploring the moon. I think the answer is just that they had different... They just called themselves different things. I don't think there's a mystery here.
But he would have called himself something in Russian.
I'm trying to think of another example that can prove me right. Hang on a minute. I mean, what's a Russian admiral called? Are they called admiral? Yeah, that's Admiral Potemkin, isn't it?
Wouldn't call him a complete... We would call him an admiral. Or we would call him the
Tsar. Tsar.
We wouldn't make
Tsar.
A different... Yeah, but that's the Russian word.
But we have a different word.
English word.
Kaiser. Kaiser. We say emperor, they say Kaiser.
Yeah, but that's because they're different languages.
Yeah.
But cosmonaut and astronaut are both words that we use in our language.
But we use Kaiser in our language as well.
Mm.
We do. Look at the band.
I'm not convinced.
I just think the Russian Space Agency called their people cosmonauts, and NASA and all the others call their people astronauts. It's a title.
I'm actually right about something this. In Russian.
No, why do you keep saying in Russian? Cosmonaut and astronaut are made up words. They're not like, well, all words are made up, but they're not.
I'll take it if you can say that cosmonaut is a Russian word.
Cosmonaut is a Russian word. Round of applause for me. That was easy. God, I'll tell you what, I'll be really outrageous. What if I win the board game now?
Yeah, good call.
I'm having it. I know I'm right. I can't prove it. 12:52 is the time. Quick, cover my modesty. Tony's in Portsmouth. Tony, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on, Tony.
So the rugby ball.
Oh, yeah.
They were shaped after the pig's bladders because they used to have an inner tube made of a pig's bladder.
Yeah, but so did footballs. So did footballs.
Yeah, but because the pig's bladders are oval.
Well, what was a football made out of?
The rugby ball was more of a pear shape.
Yeah.
So that's why they used for both rugby balls and footballs. But because of the more oval shape of it, they became more oval and standardised in 1892.
You've looked that up.
No, I haven't. I used to play rugby for the army.
Well, I used to play rugby for my school, but I couldn't have told you
Did
that
you
it
not
was
get
18...
taught that?
1892? Do me a favour. No, I didn't get taught that.
So what
you're saying is originally they'd play with the same shape ball, football and rugby.
Yeah, almost the same, yeah.
And then in 1892 they went all in on the ovoid.
Yeah, they went standard. And then it changed again in 2004.
What happened in 2004?
They sort of made the shape a little bit longer. They started making it out of synthetic materials.
Okay, but in 1892, presumably that's when the professional body was formed, or not the professional body, but the official
rugby union. Yeah, when they sort of stand a star and say the ball's got to be this shape, it's got to have this many stitches.
And do we know why they preferred an ovoid to a sphere?
Grip.
Grip, and presumably, if it was a spherical, we'd kick it.
And it goes through the air quicker.
Yeah, we'd kick it a lot more, wouldn't we?
Yeah, hence why rugby balls and American footballs sort of spin.
Yeah.
The aerodynamics.
Yeah, all right. I think you're over the line. Qualifications, I played rugby in the army. I was hoping for a bit more than that. I'm suspicious of the 1892 play. It's got a little whiff of Google to it, that has.
I suppose it's because in the military, they sort of like to...
Explain everything.
Steal things. Yeah, they like to waffle a bit.
Yeah. You're on? Well, you said that. I couldn't possibly call. Round of applause for Tony. Nicely done. So the question now, it's between Paul and David. I don't know about anybody else. Paul asked the question about the rugby ball and David answered the question about tides, but there's still 5 minutes to go. I might get Sheila Fogarty to make the final judgment. I don't know how much of it she's heard, though. Emma is in Chertsey. Emma, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
It's the one about how fossils are made. I think that was the question.
When does a bone become a fossil?
Yeah, you do get human fossils, or you can get human fossils.
I thought so.
I'm a little bit hazy on all the processes it goes through, but it's something to do with where the person or the animal dies. You need to have water around. So if an animal or a human dies on dry land in a desert, then the body would rot away and it would be a bone. Whereas if it dies on a riverbed or somewhere that then becomes flooded quite quickly after it dies, it gets buried in the sediment. Over time, that various layers build up and pushes down on it, and the bit around it becomes sedimentary rock.
So it does. What does the bone become?
Well, the bone becomes fossilized because it's being...
What is it chemically? What is it technically? So it's sedimentary rock around it. Does it become rock?
Yeah. It's the minerals in the bone. So the water from wherever it is that's, you know, the river or whatever, gradually seeps into the bone, and something to do with reacting with the minerals, and then the minerals are...
You've lost it there, haven't you? And I think you know it as well. You can tell. I tell by your voice. You just... I have something to do with the minerals. That's not what you want to be saying live on Mystery Hour.
I know. It's a long time since I'm a failed archaeologist. It's a long time since I've done this. But it's something to do with the water.
You can't be a failed archaeologist. You just haven't found anything yet.
I've never been on a dig. That's why I failed.
Oh, all right. Sorry.
I discovered it wasn't for me.
Well, better late than never, actually.
Exactly. But it's to do with the water seeps into the bones from the river or whatever.
And then there's a chemical
and
reaction.
The minerals, yes.
And the minerals turn into something else.
And they turn it into stone.
So it could happen in all sorts. It was Greek, not Latin, wasn't it? Cosmos and well, Astra is Latin and Cosmos, I don't know. I'm getting distracted by my inbox. I should never do that. I think you're going to get a round of applause for this, because anything can be fossilised. It's all about the process, not the time. You could fake it. They make fake diamonds, don't they?
By pressing the carbon and making diamonds.
All right, qualifications?
I'm a museum curator.
There you
and
go.
A failed
That's
archaeologist.
Better than being an archaeologist. You're a museum curator. They come to you, Emma. They come to you.
Exactly.
And you say, nah, don't want that. Get your own display case. I've got a museum to curate. Round of applause for
Something
Emma.
Something like that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Glenn's in Fareham. Glenn, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
The question was, can you guarantee someone will be left-handed, if both their parents
kind
are left-handed?
Kind of, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I know that is not true.
How?
And
qualifications.
Yeah. And the reason I know that's not true is because I know that you can be colorblind, for example, if your mother carries both colorblind genes.
Also, I've got other callers telling me they've got two children, one's left-handed and right-handed, one's right-handed. So that is even more compelling evidence. You're about to complicate matters, and Sheila Fogarty is limbering up to do her radio show.
Well, do you want me to explain it or not, James? Come on.
Well, I do, but I haven't got time because I've got to give away the board game now. There's no need to get all curt about it.
Well, in short, colourblindness sits on the sex gene, whereas left-handedness doesn't sit on the sex
gene. There you go. Round of applause for Glenn. Qualifications? Should have checked.
I'm a colourblind game designer.
Well, amazing. Speaking of games, I now have to give away a copy of this of the Mystery Hour board game this week. Sheila Fogarty, do we give it to the man who asked about the shape of rugby balls via his 11-year-old daughter? Or do we give it to the man who provided a really fascinating answer, which involved the information that puddles have tides?
Oh, that's a tough one because the daughter makes me think give it to the daughter.
I think you've got to set that aside. I do. I think you've just got to be brutal on
Puddles.
This. It's the Puddles man, isn't it? It's David in the Netherlands, who thankfully has an English address. You win this week's Mystery Out Ball Game. You can find the full terms and conditions at lbc.co.uk, and you can get your own copy if you didn't win from mysteryhour.co.uk. That's it from me for another day. I'll just very quickly, we can hear Keith because of your headphone bleed, James. You cover your left ear, and Eddie Mayer covers both ears with his headphones, therefore restricting the audio bleed. We'll look into that later. Here's Sheila.
You know, I skit you about your board game.
What?
Your constant references to your board game.
What do you mean constant references?
Well, you know, you're selling it. I get it. It's trade.
You should hear me plug my book.
It's trade. I do. No, it's trade. I get it. I got into a cab two nights ago, and the driver said to me, "It's you, isn't it? It's you," to me. And I'm like, yes, last time I checked. Yeah. And then the next thing I was like, "I love James O'Brien. Oh, I want his board game." And I said, "Oh, I'll get his board game."
I'll sort that out. Did you get his deets?
No, but he's familiar to me on the channel.
I'll see what I can do. I like that. Free advertising.
Oh,
try not to plug any products on your show, though, Sheila.
Yeah, he went off me fast enough, that's for sure. Anyway, thanks.